Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Saving money on everything now at Menards. Create fresher, cleaner air with damp-rid products. Control the humidity in your space with a hanging bag moisture absorber. They're great for closets and laundry rooms. Grab a 3-pack on sale through September 8th. Save big on damp-rid moisture absorbers at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, May 28th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, I hope you had a safe and enjoyable Memorial Day. I hope all of our listeners did as well. Unfortunately, Ryan, I guess you could say the box office at large, you could say Hollywood as a whole, did not really have a great Memorial Day. So let's just jump right into this. We have a lot to talk about today. Tell me what happened at the box office this past weekend.
In short, nothing good. Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, and the Garfield movie both opened, and look, it was bad. There's no two ways about it. Across the 3-day, which means, you know, that your standard Friday to Sunday, Furiosa made $26.3 million, while the Garfield movie made $24 million, so coming in second place. Those were both well below industry estimates. It's bad. So
I saw something that, like, this might be the worst Memorial Day weekend in like 40 years or something, right?
Yeah, it is the worst Memorial Day since Casper opened in 1995, and that was $22.5 million across the 4 days. Now, obviously, this doesn't take into account 2020, but even in 2021, we had A Quiet Place Part 2 and Cruella opening up. A Quiet Place Part 2 made $57 million, and Cruella made over $26 million while it was also available on VOD.
Wow.
So, you know, yeah, that's how bad things are. It was very, very bad. There's not really, like, you know, I don't have a rosy way to paint these numbers. It's not good. Furiosa, $32 million across the 4 days, and Garfield, $31.2 million. So they were in a close race, but you know, just to give an idea, Mad Max Fury Road debuted to $45 million 9 years ago. It was number two that weekend, coming in second to Pitch Perfect 2. So the first thing here to me is where I am just truly, if anyone follows me on Twitter, they know that I had nothing good to say, and I seem downright despondent. And I am, frankly, like, not that I expected either of these movies to, like, you know, make up for the lack of, like, a Marvel movie on Memorial Day, but the fact that, like, that Mad Max Fury Road audience couldn't even be retained, you know, not even accounting for inflation, like, for a movie that has been very well reviewed and very highly praised by the majority of people that have seen it. Mm-hmm. Same cinema score as Mad Max Fury Road, like, you know, and for it to open to almost 20 million less, you know, that's discouraging. And the fact that the Garfield movie couldn't capture a little bit more of that family audience, it certainly didn't help that If was still in theaters. If actually held relatively well, only dropped 52%. So, you know, there was a little bit of direct competition there, but yeah, I mean, it's terrible. You know, we look at the fact that last year we had The Little Mermaid, you know, opening, which was, you know, your standard sort of like monster opening. It opened to, let me double check those numbers real quick. If memory serves, it was close to $100 million opening. I think it was 98 over the 4 day. But yeah, but I mean, so we didn't have that this year. We that's sorely, sorely missing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it opened to $95 million across the weekend. Little Mermaid did last year. So that's what we're dealing with last year. This year, in total, the total domestic box office for the weekend was like $101 million. Oof. So like the Little Mermaid almost made that itself last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's rough. But
I can hear it in your voice, man. Like, yeah. Okay, so it's painfully clear to me now that these just dismal box office numbers are no longer a fluke, right? We're coming off of several weeks in a row of the same takeaway, and we have diagnosed several of the reasons for why this has happened. And, you know, we've talked about this before too, but it sucks because this is happening to movies that are good movies. It's not like these movies are garbage and people aren't seeing them. Like the people, you know, these are good films that we're talking about. So anyway, I guess I want to look ahead a little bit. I know you're not in the business of prognostication, Ryan, but I am curious if you have any thoughts about what the next steps in Hollywood's decline look like. We've established that like financial performances like these are not sustainable. So what do you think happens next here?
Well, look, we all knew this year was going to be bad. And there is a prevailing wisdom from everyone in the industry, both on the studio side and the exhibition side, that, you know, we just need to wait until 2025. Because 2025 will be the first year really where Hollywood has a full uninterrupted production slate and we have allowed enough time for pandemic recovery. So that can theoretically be the first year where we see what does this look like. Was $9 billion in 2023 the best it's ever going to get, or can we get closer to that $10 billion number again? We won't really know until next year. That's the prevailing thinking. And I agree with that. Like, we would have had Deadpool and Wolverine in May, you know, had things not been delayed. You know, that would make things look a lot better. That does not solve the micro problem of, like, why didn't more people come see Furiosa? Why didn't more people come see The Fall Guy? Why, you know, like, there's been more than a few movies like that this year. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't solve that problem. It would have definitely solved, like, a pipeline issue, but... Yeah, I don't know. I think for me, it is that wait until 2025. We are not going to know for real until next year. Now, if next year we come out and like Thunderbolts does bad and like, you know, some of these other movies like Megan 2 doesn't break out in the way that we hope it will, like, and some of these things start happening and some of those dominoes start falling, and maybe like even if James Gunn's behind the camera and like Superman doesn't perform the way that Warner Brothers hopes, like, then I don't know where this all goes. Like, because if you're not getting those to work and you know, with a full summer slate, with this, with that, like, that's where, so I guess to answer your question, the best I can say is I am with everyone else in the industry right now, and we just have to wait until next year.
Yeah. Variety did this big profile of Adam Aaron, who's the CEO of AMC Theaters last week. Did you read that?
I did, yes.
Yeah, so I'm going to just read a few of the quotes here from that. He was talking to the journalist at Variety, and he said, "Your industry brethren are still so negative. I understand why. It's because they're looking back. just look a little ahead and the box office in 2025 and 2026 is going to be so much bigger than 2023 and 2024. And he also said, we're aware of our current circumstances, believe me, but it's not going to stay that way. It's the first time in 4 years that I've been able to look ahead and say with some confidence that it's not going to be atrocious. And he also mentioned he's going to be spending $200 million a year to reinvest in theaters, which will renovate auditoriums with like comfier seats and recliners and like upgrade the projection systems and adding those premium large format screens that we've been talking about too. So, you know, if you listen to the CEO of the largest theater chain in the world, I think AMC, certainly the country, if not the world, it sounds like he's just sort of bracing for that wait until 2025 mentality that you're talking about. But like, I'm not convinced that 2025 is going to just, you know, we're going to flip the calendar over into January and all of these problems are going to be solved. I don't know. It just seems like,
no, look. And again, listeners of the podcast for a long time. No, I am not Mr. Pessimistic. Like I try not to be. And like, if you go through my clips on Slash Films since I started here, you have to pull teeth to get me to be overtly negative. Like in my interview for this job, to be fully candid, I was like, look, I'm not going to be the negative guy. I am opposed to it. Like my whole reason that I do this for a living is because I love movies and I love sharing that with people and I love sharing that love. And I'm the guy that had a positive spin on the Tarot box office. Like, I don't think anyone else did. Like, and I was right. The movies, you know, so I'm looking for, I'm not looking to be, this is what I love, but it is impossible for me to see the light at the end of the tunnel right now.
Yeah.
And you know, you know, I know it's like people are getting annoyed and like, you know, like I'm coming down hard on the VOD stuff. But in fairness, that's only a part of the equation. And the other thing I don't want to get lost, and you do good job of keeping me honest here, is I don't want to point the blame at the consumer. It is on the industry to fix these problems and make it more attractive to the consumer. And there are a lot of problems. There's many we need to talk about. We need to talk about pricing. We need to talk about, you know, I mean, I don't know when the last time you were at a Regal Cinema was, but like, I think since the bankruptcy, they literally have not been able to like do anything to those theaters. Mm. And like, it is a bad experience. And that's what a lot of people, that's what they have. That's what they have available. I understand why you wouldn't go to that. So, you know, it is a multifaceted problem and it's got to be addressed. And there's more to say about that. Like, you know, I was all for Tom Rothman, the CEO of Sony Pictures, being like, yeah, we need to lower ticket prices. That's great. But how can theaters do that in good confidence when you're pulling the Fall Guy after 17 days?
Yeah.
You know, and putting it on VOD. Like, how can you look them in the eye and say lower prices when you're doing that to them? So, like, both sides have got to figure some stuff out. And, like, that's what I keep coming back to. Like, I'm all for that. But, like, the theaters are, like, how can they trust the studios? You know, yeah. So it's, like, it's complicated. Like, it's really complicated. And I just real quickly, just to throw a slightly bigger picture here, like, not to focus just on the domestic box office, like Furiosa did $32.8 million overseas, which was also below estimates. So it's at $64.8 million for a movie that I've seen its budget reported to be around $170 million. You know, not great. Difference with the Garfield movie is that it's already made $66.3 million overseas because it's been out for a while. So it's at $97.4 million. And I've seen its budget reported at 60. So that will make its money back. Mm-hmm. The Garfield movie will be fine, but it's also, that number is not enough to like help theaters keep the lights on is essentially the issue. But So I don't know if you have anything else, but that's more my thing, is looking at the broad picture. I'm with you. I don't think flipping the calendar suddenly makes everything better.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the idea that AMC is going to be spending $200 million a year to upgrade its theaters and like maybe fix some of those issues that we've been talking about that we've been complaining about for years is music to my ears. I just hope that it's not a too little too late type of situation. You know, like the idea of people's habits being formed and disrupted by the pandemic and streaming and everything else. I mean, we've been talking about this stuff for so long now, it feels like silly to repeat it all the time, but like, I don't know. I just wonder if we've officially hit the tipping point where there's like the point of no return has passed, you know, like we've already gone beyond it. And I don't know, like you said, maybe we have to wait until next year to really know the answer to that. But
well, that's my concern too, is that, and so the thing, and I think I've said this on this podcast before, is that like, I was the unpopular kid in seventh grade telling people not to download music illegally because I understood that, you know, this is not going to a good place. And if you look at what happened with the music industry, we broadly devalued music. And now, like, the biggest income generator for the music industry, and look, the industry had some blame. I'm not blaming consumers. Like, they were charging too much money for certain things, whatever. But, like, but now physical media revenue and, like, actual sales of music, even, like, Apple closed its MP3 store a few years ago. Like, there is no money there anymore. The younger people, the idea of paying for music is arcane, aside from occasionally buying a vinyl record for, like, almost, like, kitschy sake. Like, it's not enough to, you know, so the problem is that people don't see the value in that thing anymore. And that still makes me mad to this day. And I am very concerned we're heading to a similar place with movies where, like, sure, you can point to the fact that The Fall Guy only dropped 28.3% this weekend, even though it's available on premium VOD. That's awesome. The problem is, I think by you bringing it home after 17 days, you're sending a message that this is just disposable.
Yeah.
It's not special in any way. And I think it's that signaling that I'm concerned about. And if you don't start, you can't completely close Pandora's box, but you've got to stop doing that. And you've got to start correcting some of these things. And that's where I'd start. But yeah, so that's my thing, is I'm worried we're heading to a place where we have broadly devalued the thing. Because you got to keep in mind, 2020, some kid that was 7 years old or whatever, watching Trolls World Tour or whatever, like, they're now, what, 11, 12? They're going to grow up not understanding that, like, no, movies just should be available to stream. Why can't I watch this at home right now? Like, we're teaching a new generation not to do this. So, you know, that's where my concern is. And I'm with you. Like, have we hit that tipping point? I hope not. But, you know, these problems need to be addressed in my eye, like, tomorrow. Like, we can't wait.
So, yeah, with the music thing, the analogy that you brought up earlier, like, I remember when I was a kid, you would spend $20 for, like, one CD or something. Yeah. And, like, obviously that industry shifted, you know, the pendulum swung so dramatically. And now we're seeing that same sort of pendulum swing in the film industry. And it's just, like, it's so rough to be, you know, tracking this stuff in real time and experiencing this and just see the decline of this form that we love so much just drop precipitously in the public view. And, like, that devaluation you're talking about, it's just, like, so it hurts my soul. So
it does. And I think the thing is that, like, you know, with the music industry, so, like, for example, like, I heard the band Korn talking about this, like, their follow-up album to their breakout album, you know, they spent, like, well over, like, $1 million recording that album, which is a lot to record an album, and, like, or millions, you know, it was a lot. You don't do that anymore. Even big bands, you're trying to save as much money as you can recording, because you know you're not going to make that money back in the same way. Like, the money just isn't there anymore. The only way they make money is touring. And so, like, I think with movies, the problem is if the box office really starts truly failing, like, and it becomes a less and less, like, you know, available thing to the industry over enough time, like, it's going to be more noticeable in a movie, like, because you're not going to have the money for a budget, you know, recording quality and things like that. Like, home recording equipment got better, so you can sort of, you know, make a cheaper record now that sounds like a professional record. I'm not saying you won't be able to make movies for lower budgets that look good, but I'm saying it's going to be noticeable, like, where that, when that money is not spent to get the volume of movies per year or the types of movies we're used to.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking in terms of, like, you know, following this decline to its logical endpoint. It kind of just seems like a lot of different types of movies are just going to be completely phased out. And, like, the big blockbuster stuff that we've come to know and love, it just seems like those are just going to go completely extinct, right? Like,
potentially, or movie making, you know, you don't have people making 20 million a movie. You don't have directors making 20 million a movie. You have people making movies because you can make money doing it, but it's not, like, a way to become rich and famous, right? Like, it maybe just becomes a completely different industry. You know, and so maybe, yeah, you do have, you know, blockbuster type movies, but it's not movie star driven. It's not that sort of thing. It's like you're saving a lot of money because everyone's getting paid less.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, I don't know. And this is, like, by the way, you and I are sort of on the same page right now. We're spelling the doom and gloom version of this. I have never in my life hoped that I'm wrong more than I hope that right now. I hope this podcast a year from now sounds stupid. But, like, at the moment, with ticket sales lagging 23% behind 2023 when we still weren't at pre-pandemic levels. Yeah, I'm feeling a little pessimistic.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, because the CEO of AMC is basically saying 25 and 26 are going to be so much better than 23 and 24. I think there is a little bit of reason to be hopeful. He certainly knows more about this industry than we do, being like, you know, completely in it and talking to the studios all the time and all of that. So yeah, just like fingers crossed that this whole thing doesn't completely go belly up.
Yeah, but what's he going to say? He's the CEO of AMC Theaters. He's the CEO of the biggest theater chain in the country. What's he supposed to say?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So my only thing is just really quickly looking at like, let's look apples to apples May next year. Thunderbolts opens May 2nd. You know, to kick off the summer. So we have a Marvel movie kicking off the summer. I am incredibly skeptical about Thunderbolts and I'm very excited about that movie personally, but something that like can draw people out the way old Marvel did. I don't know.
Yeah, those trailers are going to have to be like legendary.
Good. And like Flowervale Street, which is the David Robert Mitchell, Ewan McGregor movie that is about dinosaurs, but they won't say it's about dinosaurs. So like, I don't know. I mean, I want that movie more than I've wanted anything in my life, but like, I don't know. And then you have Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning at the end of May. And like, my only thing there is that like, that movie's going to make money, but it's going to be the other problem we talk about all the time, where that movie has now had its budget balloon and it's going to be a thing where it makes a lot of money yet loses money for Paramount. Mm-hmm. So like, we're dealing with so many of the same problems in May of next year. Everyone keeps talking about, oh, it's better. I'm like, is it? I don't know. Like, yeah. So anyway.
Okay, so let's get to a listener email. Mitch from Yuma, Arizona wrote in, "Hey, Ben and Ryan, I just wanted to hear some more of your thoughts on what you talked about on last Monday's episode. I was stunned when you said for a healthy box office, the average person needs to see 3 to 4 movies a year because my wife and I see a movie at least every 2 weeks. I know we're above average, but I figured everyone went to the theater on average once a month. My question is, if we really only need 3 to 4 visits per person per year to have a healthy box office, why have the theaters not figured out a monthly subscription-based plan yet? I know there's AMC Stubbs A-List Premiere Program, but I don't know much about it because we don't have an AMC in my town. We have a Harkins and a Regal. My wife and I personally love Harkins," he says. "There was the big fiasco known as MoviePass, but how does a program where you pay $30 a month to watch as many movies as you want not work? Give the studios 75% of that subscription divvied up amongst them while the theater makes their money on the concession sales like they always do. The more times people are in the theater, the more popcorn and soda they will buy. I don't know if you two have insight or ideas on how this could work or why it hasn't yet, but I would love to hear your thoughts. Thank you and keep up the great work." Ryan, I know you know a lot about this. The one thing that I'll just say real quick, just to kind of tee you up, is that the idea of like giving the studios 75% of this subscription and dividing that up against the studios is just not the way that those work. Like, it actually goes directly to paying for individual tickets from each studio. So it's not like Lionsgate would just suddenly receive a percentage of all of the AMC Stubbs A-List subscriptions or anything, right? So like, I don't know if you have any other thoughts on this, but I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, so the idea is that like the subscription programs, like, my understanding is that they're sort of a loss leader. You get people in the theater more frequently because like the studio still needs its money per ticket. Like that's still, I don't know precisely how that works, but the idea is that, yeah, AMC Stubbs A-List. My understanding is that's been very successful for AMC. I personally have the Alamo Draft House out here in Austin. I'm very lucky. So they have something called the season pass, which I pay $20 a month for. And then I pay like a $2 service fee every time I book something. So like, it's still incredibly cheap compared to like, and my thing is I go to the movies all the time. That's because I do that. If I were paying for tickets every time I went to a movie, I could never do it. It's hilariously expensive. So, and that does allow me to every once in a while, you know, spring for a popcorn, spring for a meal while I'm there, whatever. And also shout out to Harkins. That was where he brought up Harkins. It's a regional theater chain. That's where I grew up going to the movies. And I actually like Harkins theaters a lot. So if you have a Harkins theater near you, shout out, great little regional theater chain. I'm a big fan, but, yeah, like Harkins is a smaller theater chain. So it's harder for them to build that into their business model, I would guess. I think this is something that is kind of being cracked, but like, Cinemarks isn't very good. Like you pay for Cinemarks, you get one free ticket a month and then like a discount on the others. I think Regal tried, but again, Regal, there, if you don't know, Cineworld is the parent company of Regal Cinemas. They declared bankruptcy last year. They've been in bankruptcy proceedings. So that whole thing is a mess. Like, so they're just kind of surviving right now. I think this is absolutely a thing of the future. Like, I think that this is going to have to be, because people are sort of used to the subscription model. So your frequent moviegoers, like 100%, but like the people we're talking about, the people that are only going to the movies once, maybe twice a year right now, why on earth are they going to sign up for something that they have to pay for monthly?
Yeah,
people are already exhausted. People are already exhausted with subscription stuff. They don't want another subscription thing. So like, I completely understand. And I think this helps the people who want to go to the movies more frequently. It doesn't solve the problem of getting those people that are downright resistant to going, you know? So yeah. I think it's sort of addressing a different issue is kind of my take on it.
Yeah. And like, reading between the lines, it seems like the way things are going is there's going to be fewer movies. If the trend continues that we've been talking about, there are going to be fewer movies, fewer, maybe big budgeted movies, or at least bigger budgeted movies in the way that we understand them to exist right now. And then ticket prices are probably just going to increase because they have to make that money somewhere. And if they're not going to be able to pull in, you know, randos off the street to make this that one or two or three movies a year that they are supposed to see for a healthy box office or whatever, then, you know, they're just going to have to basically make that money from us, from the people who are going. And that's the only thing they have left, or else the entire thing completely crumbles. Right. I don't know. I'm not an economist,
I fight against that. That's where I think that's sort of where things have been going. But I fight against that. This is where I agree with Tom Rothman that like, no, we got to go to a volume business. We got to decrease it. There's a reason we see an increase every Tuesday, which is Discount Tuesday across the country. More people go, people are in for a bargain. But again, that relies on the studios and the theaters being in agreement about certain things. And I think like right now the theaters are like, hey man, why are we going to lower ticket prices for you when you keep yanking, you know, you keep devaluing, you know, the need for us to be here.
Yeah.
And so like, but I'm with you. I hope it doesn't go that way. I think it might, but I think that's also a fast track to like just the whole thing falling apart.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's take a break and then we have a few more news items to hit.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/RedCircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/RedCircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club.
Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
All right, so I'm going to just blow through a lot of these. We've been going long already, Ryan, but let me know if you have any reaction to any of these news stories. As always, I'm going to drop links to all of these in the show notes, so I encourage people to go. If anything we say here interests you, you can learn more about it at the actual article, because I'm just going to give sort of like the top line takeaways here, the headlines basically. So Rian Johnson's next Knives Out movie has a title. It is called Wake Up Dead Man, and as of I think last night we learned that Josh O'Connor, who starred in Challengers, and Kaylee Spaney, who starred in Priscilla, are going to be part of the cast along with the returning Daniel Craig. So those are the only ones that we know are confirmed right now. I think there was a rumor that, who was it, Lindsay Lohan and somebody else, I'm trying to remember who I saw this morning, might be joining the cast. But yeah, that's all that we know in terms of being confirmed right now. You can read more about Wake Up Dead Man and the title and the significance of that at the link in the show notes. Ryan, I assume you're looking forward to this movie.
Oh yeah. It's my favorite title of the three. I love the, like, I know it's like taken from a U2 song, which is kind of interesting, but like, yeah, like Wake Up Dead Man as a title for like a murder mystery is dope. Yeah. I like that. I love Kaylee Spaney. Her career so far is fascinating. I think it's kind of cool. Josh O'Connor is getting to do this after, like, you know, kind of breaking out in Challengers a bit. And yeah, like some of the other rumored cast members, like, again, I don't want to talk about rumor too much on the podcast, but like, you know, Rumor Patrol says Tom Hardy might be in it. Maybe Lindsay Lohan, like you said.
Yeah,
like,
that was the other one.
Yeah. So like, you know, that'd be cool. I don't know yet, but like, we'll see. I like, if that's true, like the Lindsay Lohan one fascinates me. Like that would be an interesting, you know,
yeah.
Like that's a poll. Nobody had that on their Knives Out bingo card, right? Like that would be. So yeah, no, I continue to be fascinated. And it also seems like what's interesting too is Glass Onion was a little older skewing, like a lot of actors in their 40s and 50s. It'd be interesting because this would be like younger skewing. So I wonder, like, you know, with Tom Hardy, I guess, being the exception there, but like it'd be interesting. That to me stood out, depending on. So yeah, very
interesting. Okay, so James Gunn has revealed the writing team behind a Green Lantern show over at DC that's been in the works for a long, long time. He confirmed on Instagram that Chris Mundy, who is one of the minds behind Ozark, Damon Lindelof, and DC Comics writer Tom King are going to be sort of the creative writing brain trust behind this show. So that's fascinating and has me more interested in a Green Lantern show than I would have been otherwise, especially Damon Lindelof's involvement. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Ryan.
I like Damon Lindelof a lot. I'm interested in, like, if it was him who was like, I have an idea for Green Lantern, or if they were like, please come do Green Lantern. Like, I don't know who approached who there, but certainly lends that series a lot of credibility from the jump.
Yeah, and obviously he worked on Watchmen, which was technically a DC property, so he's got a little bit of familiarity with that universe over there.
And crushed Watchmen, so like, you know, yeah. Hey, let's go.
Awesome. Okay, so let's see. Next up, Marvel's Vision series is still floating around and now has a Star Trek showrunner. So I think his name is Terry Metalis, who was the showrunner of, what is the show? Star Trek Picard. He was the EP, and now he's going to be the showrunner of this Vision series, which I think at one point was called Vision Quest, and this is a spinoff of WandaVision, and this was announced a long time ago, and it's supposed to be about like the White Vision character. I don't even know if people remember this, because WandaVision was so long ago, Ryan, but the whole like Ship of Theseus thing that happened where Vision was fighting a pure white version of himself, and then that character just disappeared, like he flew away. This new show is supposed to be about that version of the Vision character. So like, are people even going to be interested in a Vision show? This is one of those that I was sure was just like canceled, fell by the wayside. We were never going to hear about it again. But now that they've hired a showrunner, it's like, oh, they're serious about this?
Well,
they're
actually going to go through? Yeah, and they have a 2026 target too. So they're like, and that's the thing to me is like, wait, 2026? You mean 5 years after WandaVision? Like, you know, where I'm like, I don't know. This is one of the ones where I'm like, just why? Like, what, you know, because they've already talked about they're going to try to make the TV shows less, like, connected, so you don't feel like you have to watch them.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't this one you could just not do? Is this, yeah, like, I don't know, like, I just, I don't know, anyway, but yeah.
The idea must be, like, out of this world for Kevin Feige and his people to be like, must, all right,
they,
let's
or
go.
Either that, or you got people on, like, contract holding deals where it's, like, pay or play, right? Like, maybe people are going to get paid if you don't do it. So, yeah. Like, you just decide, okay, I guess we might as well get a show if we got to pay people.
Ooh, yeah, that's not the best way to go forward with making a show, but hopefully...
That's purely speculative, but I'm just wondering, you know, because, yeah, it is confusing to me, but...
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of Star Trek, a new Star Trek movie is in the works. It's been in the works for a little while. We know that Toby Haynes, who directed some of Andor and also some Black Mirror, is going to be directing. Seth Graham Smith, who wrote the Lego Batman movie, has signed on to write the script. We've known that this movie has been in the works for a little while, but some more information came out about this next Star Trek film, which is that it's going to be a prequel. And Simon Kinberg is now attached to produce. And this show is going to be set decades before the events of the 2009 movie that was directed by J.J. Abrams, likely around modern times. And it is said to involve the creation of Starfleet and humankind's first contact with alien life. So you can read our article. We actually don't have time to get into all of the Star Trek timeline stuff, but you can read our article that breaks all of this down really, really well. So I encourage people to go check that out. And then this one I know you have a personal interest in, Ryan, which is Godzilla X Kong director Adam Wingard is not returning for the sequel. So, I mean, I was kind of shocked when I heard this, but it seems like Wingard wants to make a smaller movie in between, or wanted to make a smaller movie in between Godzilla Kong projects, and Legendary had a release date staked out and said, no, we got to keep this thing going. And he was just like, well, I can't do it in the time frame that you're looking for. So now they're looking for a new director. So I know you wrote a whole article about here are our picks for who we think should direct this movie. I don't necessarily want you to spoil that, but
yeah.
Do you have any like broad thoughts about this topic?
Well, Adam Wingard, he did two of these movies in a row under pretty brutal circumstances. Like, you know, it's a tall order to do a trilogy back to back like that, like under a tight timeline. Like that's tough. So, and he's making a movie called Onslaught for A24 is what it is. And just like by the time that movie's done, he won't, you know, it just doesn't fit their timeline. I love Adam Wingard. I love what he did. I kind of understand why he's moving on. And I don't think it's one of those things where he's irreplaceable, right? Like I would love it if he came back, but I think given some of the people I put on this list, I think there's some people out there that could crush this. And the one thing I will say is a man named Brian Duffield should be getting a phone call. That's like, if they don't call him, I think something just is not correct in the studio system, but Brian Duffield did No One Will Save You last year, but he also kind of spearheaded the Skull Island animated series on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So he's already got like a foot in the camp of, you know, the MonsterVerse. He's proven himself. Like, I think that to me, if there's one guy out there that like would be the home run choice, it's him.
Excellent. All right. Final news story is Steven Spielberg's top secret next movie has a release date. So this is very exciting. David Koepp is reuniting with Spielberg. He's the screenwriter behind Jurassic Park and War of the Worlds. And I think this is going to be the sci-fi movie that has been sort of kicked around a little bit, like Steven Spielberg returning to the world of aliens again and science fiction. Details are extremely hard to come by right now. I think they're keeping this one very, very close to the vest. But I think this is supposed to be coming out in May of 2026. So we don't have that much longer to wait for a new Steven Spielberg movie, which is always exciting. You can read more about like speculation about what the project could be and stuff like that at the link in the show notes. But Ryan, I have to assume you're stoked about a new Spielberg.
Yeah, and supposedly it's an alien movie. That's the that's the scuttlebutt. From the writer of Jurassic Park. I mean, God, good David Koepp right now, man. Like writing the new Jurassic World movie, reuniting with Spielberg. What an exciting time.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, last thing I wanted to do is read one more five-star review. I've been asking people to leave five-star reviews because it helps us basically utilize the algorithm in its best form to help us get in front of listeners who maybe haven't found the show yet. I'll just read one today, and it's from Julie Casey, who says, "More Chris, please. Love this podcast and listen to every episode all are great, but especially Chris, who is a smile. Thanks, guys. And I sent this to Chris and he was like, huh, that's awesome. I've never been called a smile before. And I was like, you know what, Chris? I don't think anybody's ever been called a smile before.
I love that. But, I love that.
So thank you, Julie Casey, and thank you all for listening. So that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club.
Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.